Welcome to the Crystal Pain Show, where we help you embrace your life right where you are and give you practical steps to get where you want to go. Whether you are in your car, folding laundry, cooking, cleaning, or maybe even just enjoying a cup of coffee and a few minutes of quiet, we're so glad you're joining us today. Here's your host, wife, mom of six kids, foster mom, entrepreneur, and author, Crystal Pain.
Welcome to another episode of the Crystal Pain Show. Very unexpectedly, we have taken another, I believe it's a 3-week break. I don't even know. I've lost track.
I know. It's either two or three.
It's been a lot of days. We had an episode that came out near the end of December, and we had planned that we were going to do episodes every single week. And the last 2.5 weeks of our life have looked very, very different than we had envisioned. And I was talking to somebody today. She was saying, Crystal, this has got to be really hard for you because I know the beginning of the year is your favorite time of year. It's this clean start, fresh start, goals. And also it tends to be the first 2 weeks of January are a little bit quieter, mostly because blogging wise, people are kind of back into their routines and things like that. There aren't a lot of extracurricular stuff yet. The kids are off school for a little while. And so it just feels like it takes a little bit for things to kind of rev back up to normal speed. So I always think of this window of the first 2 weeks of January is like when I read a lot of books and do a lot of organizing and really attack the goals. And that did not happen this year. And it is just so interesting because December 31st, we had been in Kansas for 9 days, I believe, or we'd been gone for 9 days on our Kansas trip to visit both of our families for Christmas. And we were going to be headed back we were going to try to make it to O'Fallon, Illinois. And we left early in the day thinking, okay, we will get in there probably by 9 or 9:30. And that's going to be great because one of my goals, as I talked about in our goals episode, is turning my phone off at 8 p.m. and going to bed by 10:30 and just really focusing on working on winding down early. Like that is one of my goals for this year. Mm-hmm. And so I thought December 31st, what better way to start out the new year with, I'm just going to go to bed early. And
why not start now?
I'm not going to stay up until midnight. Because I want to start the new year well. Famous last words. So our drive home ended up looking differently than we expected because our three older kids, they're almost 20 and 17 and 15. They really wanted to get home by New Year's Eve. There were some things that were planned with different friends. And so they came up with this plan that they could leave a day early and drive back from Kansas to Tennessee. And they've done a lot of driving on their own. They're great drivers. Like we felt very comfortable with them driving. Our only thing was we wanted them to be back early enough on New Year's Eve that they weren't going to get into any sort of crazy traffic or
driving at night.
Who were drunk. And also that they would stay over at friends' houses and not be out driving late at night. So they'd worked out all the details. So they left December 30th. They drove a few hours. They stayed the night. They left the next morning and all was going well. Meanwhile, we're back in Kansas at the Airbnb packing up. We are going to be kind of right behind them and leaving just a day later. And after we left, so we're on the road, I think we'd maybe been on the road for an hour. And we get a call from Catherine. They had just made it home. So they'd made it home early in the afternoon and she sounded terrible. We're like, what is wrong? She's like, on the drive today, I just started feeling really bad and I'm just feeling worse and worse. Well, meanwhile, we're hours away and we also are dealing with three little kids because we had the three younger kids who were just really struggling. They're usually great travelers. And we ended up needing to stop. I mean, it felt like every 45 minutes. It was just very slow going. And Micah was not feeling well at this point. And so that contributed. And I think all of them were just, they were just done. I mean, it'd been a very long trip with so many different people, so many different things. And they were just done with being out of the routine. And so we were trying to be really cognizant of their needs, take it slow. But then we get this call and Catherine's all the way in Tennessee and she is not doing well. And that was really hard. It was the first time that I remember being so far away from a child when they are really sick. Mm-hmm. Can you think of any other time? Like, I can't think of any other time.
No, not like that.
And so instead of us getting to the hotel early and going to bed early, the drive took a lot longer. And we were on the phone with Catherine. We were on the phone with Caitlin and Silas trying to make sure that they got her the different things that she needed and making sure she was, you know, taking medicine, taking care of herself, drinking. We DoorDashed some things so that she would have chicken noodle soup and that she would have enough to eat and drink and all of that. And, but we also didn't really want Caitlin and Silas to be in her room or to, they would leave stuff outside her door because we didn't want them getting sick because it seemed like she was very sick. And, so we pull up to O'Fallon, Illinois, and we had lost track of time. Like at this point, we weren't really paying attention to anything. And we see fireworks in the distance. And I'm like, why are there fireworks? And all of a sudden we look at the time. Oh, it's 12:03. Mm-hmm. We totally missed the beginning of 2025 because we were so focused on just getting to the hotel and then also taking care of Catherine long distance. And it was that thing of, should we stop or should we keep going?
Right.
But the three younger kids were struggling so much. We're like, we just need to get them inside and get them to bed. So we stayed the night there. It seemed like the next day, you know, Catherine had survived the night. She was okay. And we got home as quickly as we could. And when we got home, we could tell that she was very sick. But also, in the drive home, I started not feeling well. You weren't feeling well. Micah was not doing well at all. So by the time we get home, I'm barely functioning and Micah's really not doing well. So we bring all our stuff inside. I don't even think there was, we didn't even unpack. There was a whole bunch of stuff that we just left in the car and just got in the house and I got into bed and then Micah was really struggling to breathe. And so I think you were upstairs trying to help Catherine in her room and help her because she was very sick. And I was down there with Micah and his breathing was just terrible. And I thought he had croup, but it was very different than croup that we've had with other kids where usually, you know, like they have this really bad cough and they're struggling to breathe, but it's like, you can put them in, you can take them outside in the cold and it will stop the cough, or you can put them in warm air with the humidifier and, you know, the shower and it's going to stop that. But his was just like this every breath he was struggling to breathe. And then he started making these really awful raspy noises.
Well, it was weird because it was like he needed to cough up stuff out of his lungs, but he would not quite get it all there. He just didn't want to have that deep cough. And I don't know if it's because he didn't know how to, or it was, it felt very helpless. Like you wanted to stick your hand in his throat and just like pull it all out, you know?
And so you and I were trying to decide what to do because we could, you know, there are different options, but at this point it was, I'm thinking it was 9 or 10 at night. I don't, I think it was fast coming to the time when urgent care would be closed and his breathing. I got him.
Plus it was New Year's weekend.
Yeah. So it was New Year's Day
and everything was closed.
And so I got him to kind of calm down, like as far as he didn't act like he was so miserable. He was kind of falling asleep, but his breathing was still terrible. I mean, every single breath, it was just this like it was this horrible noise that was coming every single breath. And I thought maybe, well, if he calmed down and he fell asleep, it might, you know, he mm-hmm. might get into this deep sleep and then his breathing would get better. And he fell asleep and it didn't get better. And so it was a very short window of time because we were like, this is not okay. Like, we need to do something about this. And finally then decided you needed to take him into the ER. We're just like, we're not going to mess around with this. He's, you know, it maybe it's just croup, but we don't want to just mm-hmm. guess because we can't seem to do anything that's helping him get better. So you leave to take him into the ER and I'm at home not feeling well at all. And Catherine's upstairs sick. And it was just this kind of helpless feeling of like, I have got to get sleep. I am so tired. And if I do not get sleep, I am going to be really sick. But also I need to help my daughter upstairs. And I feel like that was just the story of the next 10 days of just feeling so pulled so many different directions. So you take him to the ER. It ended up being croup. They gave him steroids though. And mm-hmm. that like fixed it.
Yep, and because all of the tests for flu, COVID, what was the other one?
Strep.
Yeah.
I think RSV.
RSV. That's what it was.
Yes. Everything all negative. Was negative. And I was just really grateful for that because I was thinking pneumonia, you know, I'm thinking RSV, I'm thinking all these different things. And it was none of those. So he didn't have a very high fever, but he just mm-hmm. was pretty miserable. So you come home and we got Catherine settled and him settled. We fall asleep, wake up the next day, and we're trying to kind of get things unpacked while both of us don't feel well, and keeping an eye on Catherine, trying to help her. And we're just realizing like she's really sick. And I can't remember the last time that she had been that sick. She did have the flu, I think, when she was about 10 years old. I'm trying to think if it was, maybe she wasn't 10 because I'm almost thinking it was, no, it wasn't. I don't remember. If it was, maybe it was 2018. So anyway, she was much younger though, and she was very sick. And I remember her just laying on a mattress in our room and calling the doctor and being like, she has a very high fever. She's struggling to breathe. And she had the flu, like she had tested positive for flu mm-hmm. that time. And them saying to me, well, if she has a fever over 104 for 10 days, you definitely need to bring her in. And I'm thinking, a fever over 104 for 10 days? Like, what? But I think it was a year when so many people were sick and this mm-hmm. is just what they were seeing. So that was the only time that I can remember her being this sick, but then she kind of was getting progressively worse. Like mm-hmm. we were even worse than that sickness.
Yeah.
And she was basically, I felt like she had the entire cocktail of every single type of sickness you can have. I mean, she had,
I think so.
She had a sore throat. She was throwing up. She had diarrhea. She had a very high fever, 104.5. It kept spiking. We were doing Tylenol and Motrin. That was the only way we were keeping it down. She had, you know, terrible body aches. She was having trouble breathing. And,
you know, after I did in the research that I've done since then, you know, those are typical signs of the flu from this go around.
Yeah.
So
like
even with the vomiting and diarrhea that you don't necessarily think with an upper respiratory infection, sure enough, that's flu A.
It's like everything. So we ended up day three, we took her in to the ER because I just was like, you need fluids. Like she was not eating. We could barely get her up out of bed to be able to just like for her to go to the bathroom. Like it was like everything that we could do just to get her up mm-hmm. to go to the bathroom.
She was miserable.
And she was miserable. So we went into the ER and it was so interesting because it was our first experience to take an adult child into the ER. Like she's been to the doctor, mm-hmm. but other than that, like the ER, you know, we've taken David in, we've taken Micah in, and I'm used to the pediatric ER. And mm-hmm. so it was so weird because we walk in, she can barely walk, and she, she just wants to go, you know, kind of lay on this chair. And the lady's like, well, do you have your driver's license? And I'm like, no, I have my driver's license. She's like, no, she needs her driver's license. And I was like, well, can we just go over to the pediatric ER? She's like, no, she's over 18. I need her to sign this paperwork. I need her to, and I'm just like, oh, this is a totally different ballgame. Now that all that said, they were very gracious. They were very kind. They actually ended up like we didn't have our driver's license and there was no way that I was going to turn around and go back and get it. Like, yeah. You know, and I was just like, we can't go back. And she was just like, fine, like just, we'll just, you know, and the other thing was she'd never been into the ER. She'd never been in the hospital. So they didn't have a record of anything mm-hmm. for her as well. So then we had to do all of the stuff for, you know, you have to just fill out more paperwork and stuff because of that. But gratefully, they were like, if she can't fill it out, we'll let you fill it out, even though she should be filling it out and stuff. So they were very kind and gracious, but it was just this kind of shock of, oh, she's an adult. Like, I don't have a say in this. Like, this is her coming in. But anyway, we got her back and they ran a litany of tests and right away it was flu A, came back positive for that. And they were like, yeah, it's real bad this year. And they were literally like, you are the next contestant on the flu A show. And they were like, you're going to be really sick for the next few days. They said at least 3 to 5 days she was going to be really, really sick. And so they gave her fluids and gave her breathing treatment and made sure that kind of we got everything stabilized and stuff. They did a chest x-ray and said it wasn't pneumonia, but she definitely had bronchitis and gave us some different things to look for and sent us home. And honestly, her getting the fluids in her, like, really, that perked her up some, like, because she was just very dehydrated.
Yeah.
They did have a terrible time getting the IV in. And she, for years, has been very squeamish of things like needles and getting blood drawn. And so it was like, she's never had an IV before. And she's, you know, getting an blood drawn has been just a really horrific experience for her. Just like, it's just really not her thing. And so, of course, then it took them multiple people, multiple tries, bringing in the ultrasound machine, and then at least 30 minutes of the ultrasound machine and multiple people, like, to finally get the IV in. And they got an IV in at first, and then they took it out because they said it wasn't, like, it wasn't in right. They needed to get a better vein. And I was just like, we work so hard for that. And so the thing about it was, is it was great because she faced her fears of getting an IV. And I was so honestly grateful because, as we'll see later on in the story, that was a really helpful thing to have kind of just face that fear head on. And, you know, she survived. So we come back home, and for the next 12 hours or so, she seemed a little bit better. I mean, she was still very, very sick. She was throwing up that night, like, and not able to even get out of bed, and just, like, so out of it and so sick. This tells you, like, she would just throw up off the side of her bed. Like, she just couldn't even, it, like, she was so, so sick. And she felt terrible, but it was almost like I would come up there. She'd be like, Mom, I'm so sorry. And I'm like, honey, it's fine. Like, you know,
And it was only a few times that she actually threw up, right?
Yes.
It wasn't like a constant thing she was dealing with.
No, gratefully. So you and I kind of took turns sleeping up in her room because we just felt like she's so sick, but we also can't bring her downstairs because we don't want her exposing anybody else. And we had kept all the other family away from her, and just you and I were the ones that were going into our room and helping her. And I'm so glad that we were doing that because we thought, like, you know, we got fluids in her, like, okay, it's flu A, it's going to be bad, but we're going to make it through. The next day she woke up, and so this was day 5, and something had really changed. And the day before, on day four, so she went into the ER on day three. Day four, she seemed better like most of the day, but as the day wore on, she started really complaining of a lot of pain in her, like in her lung area and in her side and
ribs,
having a lot more trouble breathing. And we noticed that her breathing was really, really shallow. And it was almost like she was panicking to try to get breath.
Yeah, they were more rescue breaths, but she was saying that she couldn't take a deep breath because of the pain. So yes, that if the pain hadn't been there, she would have been able to take deep breaths. So I got, you know, heating pads and put one under her back, one on her ribs. Seemed to help a little bit, but it didn't alleviate it all the way. And the Motrin wouldn't hit it either.
Yes. And so that was, we were really confused about that. I thought, well, maybe she's just been laying in bed for so long. You know, she does have bronchitis. They said she was really, really sick. They said she's going to be really, really sick for 3 to 5 more days. And so we were just kind of confused as to why she was in so much pain. So again, we had slept up in her room, and she finally got into a deep sleep that night. And when she did, we noticed that her breathing didn't change. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes when you get into a deep sleep, then you'll, your breathing relax, will be a little bit more relaxed. And hers was just like, she was barely, like it was just these little tiny rescue breaths. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, this is not good. And so when she woke up the next morning, immediately after she woke up, I was just like, something has changed. And she said, Mom, I'm so weak. And like, she could barely talk. It was like she was having trouble talking because she was having trouble getting like breathing. And she was just like, Mom, I'm so weak. And I said, do you feel a lot worse than yesterday? She's like, yes. And that was really confusing to me because like, why would she have felt so much worse? And so immediately after I talked to her, and after I saw how she was breathing whenever she was in her deep sleep, I just was like, we need to get eyes on her. And we took her, we have the pulse ox, and so we took her oxygen levels and her heart rate, and her oxygen levels were not, they weren't terrible, but they were not good. I think she was at a, she like at an 89 or 90. 89, 90. Yeah. And so that was concerning to us. And then just, but it was more so about how she just couldn't seem to breathe. And she was just, it was like she was, it, the way she was presenting, you would have thought she was having a panic attack. Like that's, it was just like these very shallow, short breaths and like struggling to talk. But I knew based upon how she was when she was sleeping, like that was just how it was actually, you know, something wasn't right. So I hated to take her back into the ER because they'd said she's going to be really sick for 3 to 5 days. Also, it's a $500 copay. And so it was like, and when we had gone in there before, we'd had to wait, I think 2-ish hours before she had gotten back. And so I said, what if we were to just take her into urgent care? They can have eyes on her. And then if everything's okay and this is just part of the flu, then we'll just know. But I'd rather have some professional have their eyes on her to make sure that this is okay. So you ended up taking her into the ER. I'm sorry, into the urgent care because I'd taken her into ER before, and you pick it up from there because I wasn't there with you.
Went into urgent care and they were questioning why we were there. They were surprised at her respiration rate. It was rather high. Heart rate was high. Oxygen levels low. And they, after about 5 minutes or so of consulting amongst them, they're like, you know what? We need to send you to the ER because there's some certain criteria that you have to meet in order for us to be able to treat you. And there are certain criteria, like 4 criteria that they have where they would send you to the ER, and we were meeting 3 of them, mainly those 3 metrics. And so the urgent care that I went to was right next to the ER that we had gone to before. And that was the whole reason that I went there, just in case that we needed to go. That way they didn't need to call an ambulance for us. And we just head on over to the emergency room.
They wanted to call an ambulance.
No. She just said, because I'm sending you to the ER, I can call an ambulance. Okay. I'd be glad to call an ambulance for you. But I said, no, it's just literally right in the same parking lot. So we did that, went over there. And because the fact that she was having issues breathing, that put her higher on the scale for being seen. And so they put her in triage pretty quickly. Started in to do an EKG and get us through the process. And I filled out the registration paperwork back in the emergency department. So that went very smoothly. I was, and in fact, I think we went midday. Yes, we went mid-afternoon. And it was pretty dead, actually.
Because when we had gone in before, there had been a lot of people in there. So I was so grateful that you got right back, because if it had been like it had been before, I mean, I just feel like
she
was not in a space to be sitting there for 2 hours.
I think the reason that we were sent back was because she was having breathing issues.
Yes.
If someone's having breathing issues, you get triaged right away, because that's life or death.
Well, and also one of the things that when we had been in the ER before, I noticed that they were bringing people pretty quickly back to triage, and then they'd send them back out to sit to wait for a bed. And I could tell they were doing that just to make sure, okay, can you wait for an hour and a half? Because they were really full. And so I think that that's really wise, because it's like they're having eyes on them. They're checking all the vitals and all of that. And I think with her, they would have taken her back regardless of.
And I don't think that before they had done an EKG when you had gone back with her. So
oh, no. You were texting me, and like right away you're saying these different things. I'm like, oh, they're treating this very differently. When we came in before, I felt like they were just like, yes, another case of the really bad flu that's going around. And then this time they were right away. I think they drew blood and they did an EKG and stuff like that. And so I could tell like, oh, there's a lot more that's at play here.
I remember one of my friends telling me that she saw marked difference when she started taking this DS01. And I was really intrigued. Well, fast forward a little bit, and I had the opportunity to try it myself, and I have been so impressed. I have noticed that ever since I started taking this, my skin is better, my digestion is better, and I just feel better overall. What is DS01? It is formulated with 24 clinically and scientifically studied strains to support whole body benefits, including gut health, skin health, heart health, immune health, gut barrier integrity, gut microbiome balance, and micronutrient synthesis. And it's just 2 capsules a day. I love that. At night, I usually take magnesium. I just put the capsules right by my magnesium. And then I remember before I go to bed, take the 2 capsules. Super easy, super simple. It's one of those health changes that you can literally do in 15 seconds a day. So if you are wanting to prioritize your health in 2025, or you would just like to feel better, get ahead of the new year with a routine that helps you now by going to seed.com/crystal and use code 25crystal to get 25% off your first month. That's 25% off your first month of Seed's DS01 Daily Symbiotic at seed.com/crystal, code 25crystal. If you want to set your child up for success, but maybe your child is struggling in a specific subject in school, or they're needing help with their homework and you just feel like, I don't know where to turn, I don't know how to help them. Well, IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids that covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. It's designed to help kids really understand and master topics in a fun way with positive feedback. And I can tell you, Silas used IXL for his math class. He loved the real-time data that you would get. He's such a person who loves all the graphs and charts and that sort of thing, very different than me. And it really motivated him to see exactly where he was doing and how he was doing. And he actually wanted to work ahead because of the motivation that he got from IXL. This program has been proven to improve kids' grades. Backed by research, kids using IXL are scoring higher on tests. It's going to work for any of your kids. This is the cool thing. You know, every child learns differently, but IXL has used advanced algorithms to give the right help to each kid, no matter their age or personality. And I love this part. One subscription gets you everything. There's one site for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. And if your child is struggling, this is such a smart investment. It'll also save you money because a single hour of tutoring costs more than a month of IXL. And I love that IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. Crystal Payne podcast show listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/today. Visit IXL.com/today to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
I think that she was a little bit more hydrated than when you had taken her. So they were able to use the ultrasound. I mean, they did that right away. They didn't try without it. And they were able to get the IV in.
She also told me that they said that they sent their best, whatever it's called, the person to put the IV in.
Yeah, that's what they told them.
And I think because on her records, it said they'd had a really hard time before. So I guess he ended up putting two IVs in just in the off chance that, because he's like, that way they don't have to call me back. I'm just going to put two in so you have both.
Yep. Well, because he also knew that they ended up taking her up to a step down unit. So it wasn't quite a critical care unit, but it was an intermediate care unit. And in that unit, they require to have both arms.
Oh, okay.
So that's why he did it.
Well, it also, again, I was just so grateful that she'd had that experience 2 days before of getting the IV in, because then it wasn't this scary, hard thing for her. It was like, oh, I've done this before.
Yeah. Trying to think. So then they gave her some medication.
I'm going to back up a little bit because she told me that by the time she got to the ER, she said she was feeling really, really weird. And she said she was feeling really out of it. And she said it was like she was in this fog and she was not able to function. And
I don't think that she had been that way before we got to the ER.
Right. And so she said that whenever she was, they called her back and they were saying, second door on the left. And she said she couldn't figure out where the second door on the left, which way left was, what that meant. And she said she walked like right past where she was supposed to go. And they had to, and she said she felt like she was just going to collapse in the hall. And she said it was just this really, really weird feeling.
Interesting. So that would go to what they ended up finding, which I thought she had exhibited those signs before we had actually left, but not to that degree. So they ended up doing a chest x-ray. Then they did some more blood work. And then did a CT scan, which surprised me that they went ahead and did a CT. But they told me that that was to confirm that it was pneumonia. Maybe there might have been another reason why they did it that they weren't telling me. I don't know. But I was glad that they had the x-rays and blood work that they could compare to when we had been in 2 days prior, because they were able to see how quickly things had gone downhill. At that point, after the CT, they confirmed the diagnosis. They confirmed and said that it was flu A. It turned into pneumonia. They had some signs of sepsis that they were treating her with more fluids for to get rid of that. And then they wanted to put her up in that intermediate care unit. So we went up there, and then that was what, about seven? Yeah, it was about 8 o'clock that we ended up getting up there, because they let you come in past visiting hours, and we traded off shifts.
And we're just so grateful that we went in when we did, because it was just, she, you know, she recounted to me then afterwards, she said it was like she went downhill so quickly. Like, she felt it in herself. And it was like, I don't think the sepsis really hit
until we were in the ER.
Until, like, right around, I mean, because she was just, it was the very beginning stages. And sepsis is the kind of thing that once it hits, like, I read, every hour you have an 8% less chance of surviving it. And so I'm just so grateful that there was that prompting, like, you need to have eyes on her. And that in urgent care, they were like, you need to go to the ER. And then in the ER, they were like, we need to do blood work right away. Like, I'm just so grateful, because I heard from one mom who said she took her daughter into the ER 3 times. They never ran blood work, and she ended up dying in the ER the third time, and it was from sepsis. And so I'm just really grateful that they were on it and that they were so proactive, and just immediately getting her on antibiotics, immediately, like, really taking it very seriously from the get-go. And just, I felt like they were incredibly proactive in what they did, and that really stopped things, like, nipped the sepsis in the bud, because by the next morning her numbers were already looking so much better.
Right.
And I mean, it just had to have been a few more hours. Like, I don't live in what ifs, you know, but I've really struggled with thinking of, you know, there were multiple nights when I was so tired and I was not feeling well, that I slept in her room for a few hours. And then, you know, Micah was up because he wasn't feeling well. So then I went downstairs and slept with him, and just thinking of, you know, I could have missed, like, I could have missed the signs, but just so grateful that God just prompted me that morning, you know, she needs to go in. And, so by the time she got up to the step down unit, which was on the ICU floor, which is, again, a very interesting thing, because since it was the ICU floor, she got amazing care, because all the nurses are ICU nurses and they're just prepared for, I mean, she was such a simple case compared to so much of what they're used to. And so by the time I got there, she was already doing, like, they had her, she was a lot more stable. They had her on oxygen and IV fluids and the antibiotics. And there were just, she was already, her heart rate, her oxygen levels, and her blood pressure, like, they were more stable, because her blood pressure had been low.
It'd been really low.
So the hard thing was, is that we found out we couldn't stay the night in her room. So when you had told me, I think it was maybe 4:30 or 5 o'clock, you had said they're going to admit her. And they started,
it took quite a while.
They started going ahead and treating her for everything in the ER unit, because until they could get her moved up. And so I'm picturing, okay, I'm going to, you know, take care of all these things here. I'm going to take a shower. I'm going to, you know, pack my bag, and I'm going to have everything all ready. I'm going to go spend the night at the hospital. I hadn't showered for 24 hours, which, if you follow me on Instagram, you know, like, I am a religious showerer. And so it was like, it was just one of those days. There's so much that had happened that I hadn't gotten my shower yet. And so I was like, right before I go to the hospital, I'm going to shower. So it's 7:45, I think. And I am getting the kids to bed, and then I was going to finish out doing my stuff and then go up to the hospital and spend the night with her. And so I'd kind of planned, you know, I'll probably leave like 8:45 and get up there. And so I'm putting them to bed, and you said, you texted me and you're like, you don't get to spend the night here. You can't room in her room. And visiting hours end at 8, and it's 7:45. And you said, when I got them, they're willing to extend it to 9, for you, but you have to get up here right now. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't shower. I was grungy and I threw some stuff in a bag and I got up there as quickly as possible. Cause I'm like, I need to see my child. I am not even going to be able to stay in her room. You said that. And I said, well, is there a waiting room? Is there somewhere I can stay? And you're like, there's a waiting room. I'm like, I'm sleeping in the waiting room then. So it was so interesting because then I was like, and you're like, by the time you get up here, it's going to be all closed. So you're going to have to go through the ER unit even to get up here. And I was so grateful that I said, could you come down and meet me to take me where I need to go? I was so glad you did because I would have been completely lost. And also we had to have a security guard come and approve us, take pictures of our driver's license and take us literally up there because right. It was after hours. And so we get up there and it was just this really surreal thing. Like I walked in the room. There is so much that had happened. I was at home and I wasn't really able to get anything done. I mean, I had plans for all these projects that I was supposed to do that day and none of it happened. I stress cleaned the house, but it was like kind of where I would go around in circles. I mean, it was literally like, I just couldn't really like breathe because mm-hmm. I just needed to know that she was okay. I wanted to be up there, but also I was like, I need to be here with my other children. They need me here too. And so I got in the room and it was just this weird feeling. Like I just wanted to cry. It was like, she's been through so much and then I'm only going to get to see her for a little bit. And then I'm going to go sleep out in the waiting room. And I was just worried about her. And, but she was really in good spirits. And was just like, Mom, look at everything I'm attached to. Like that was the thing. And the nurses were so kind. The nurse was like, I understand. I would absolutely be sleeping in the waiting room. I'm sorry that we have these rules. It's the ICU floor. And they went on to explain later. I think it was the next day they explained to us how a lot of people are in the ICU for an extended period of time. It's a really emotionally, physically exhausting, and they really want the patient to have time to be able to rest and the family to have time to be able to rest. And so the reason they have the visiting hours like they do is to encourage families to be able to go take a break and get some rest because you're going to run yourself ragged if mm-hmm. you don't. And I think there's a lot of wisdom in that. And they also said, you know, if someone is not going to make it, of course they would let them room in. So I took it as a very good thing that they were like, you can't room in here because right. that means she's okay. And you know, she's stable. And the nurse said, if anything changes, I will come out immediately and I will get you and I will tell you and stuff. So I ended up, it was actually a really nice waiting room. I was pretty much the only person in there. I had a couch to lay on. Of course, I hadn't showered, so that was kind of icky, but I had brought my blanket and my pillow and I slept pretty decently, which then the next morning, so many people told me that they had stayed up a lot of the night praying and then I felt badly. Like, but I know that that's what my body needed because mm-hmm. I still was not feeling well. And so I was just grateful to be able to sleep and then to get to, you know, come in the next day and really talk to her and be there. And there's so much that we have to be grateful for. And, you know, she was so sick and she is going to have a long road of recovery. You don't get that sick and stay that sick and then just pop back out of it. But we were just grateful that she had such determination to, you know, get well and to want to get up and to want to leave the hospital and to get off oxygen and to really try to do everything she could to get well. And so she only had to be there two nights and then they were able to release her. We were so grateful. We thought she was going to need to stay a third night. And then they surprised us the evening of the third day saying, she's discharged. She gets to go home. She's just now, I would say today she's maybe at 40% of her normal strength, which is huge progress over where she was. Her school, gratefully, college does not start until the 21st, mm-hmm. which most colleges start well before then. Her college starts late, and so that is giving her extra time to recover. We're going in for blood work tomorrow. So after this podcast is, by the time this podcast goes live, we will already know the results of that. There were some concerning things, like she had high blood sugar and some other things that her white blood cells, red blood cells, platelet counts were low. And they think all of that was just related to the sepsis and related to the fact that she was so sick. Mm-hmm. But we need to go back and get that checked to verify that there's nothing else going on. So by the time this comes out, we will know that. I'm kind of anxious to have those numbers and know that. But we're just really, really grateful. Grateful for God's hand in so many ways. Mm-hmm. Throughout this whole thing, and so grateful for so many people, like literally thousands of people who follow me on Instagram, who wrote in. I mean, I don't even know how many messages. I kind of looked through to see the responses, and I know it was upwards of 5,000 responses of people just saying, "We are praying for you." Mm. Our church is praying for you. Like our home group is praying for you. Like just so many people that we will never know this side of heaven. And I just felt so humbled by our local community, her community, and our global community online rallying around us and just loving us so well and praying for her and just seeing God answer so many prayers. And they believe that, you know, she's going to make a full recovery. And she is so grateful every day for just getting a little bit better and a little bit better. And, you know, thinking of where she was a week ago compared to where she is today, I mean, she couldn't get out of bed. And today she went and met a friend. Like she made her own food. She did her own laundry. Like she's still very, very tired and still, you know, struggles to breathe and has to really take it slow, but she's made huge progress. And so we're just really, really thankful. And yes, the beginning of the year did not look like we thought. We also had multiple other things that happened. Three ER visits, three urgent care visits, 2 days in the ICU step down unit is our current total for January 1st through January 16th. So
no, you missed an ER one urgent care visit.
Did we have four urgent care visits? I think we only had three urgent care.
Do we have three? Well, and yes. Five stitches.
Yes, Silas got elbowed yesterday, and so Jesse texted me and said, "I'm not going to be able to do those errands that I told you I was going to do because I am picking Silas up from basketball early. He just contacted me, and we need to go to urgent care because he needs stitches." So that was 15 years. Silas has been the rough and tumble boy who has done every single sport pretty much that there is, and this is his first set of stitches. So I think that that's pretty impressive. And the fact that Micah beat him out, I don't even think we talked about this on the podcast. In December, Micah cut his head open and landed in the ER. Thank you, Micah, for helping us reach our deductible in the third week of December 2024. But it was our first time in 20 years of parenting to have a child get staples and or stitches. And apparently that like opens a portal, somebody told me today, that has now been opened. And we are hoping, like, third time's a charm. So we've done three ER visits, three urgent care visits, 3 days in the ICU step down unit. So, you know, third time's a charm. We're done this year for ER, urgent care, and hospital stays. That's the plan.
When we were in the urgent care last night, because I had just taken him to urgent care to get tested for strep the day before. So yes, you did miss one urgent care.
No.
Visit. Oh, you counted
Catherine
that one?
Urgent care, Silas urgent care, Silas urgent care.
Okay.
Yes.
It was the same PA both visits in two separate facilities. And he said, we do not have a punch card here. The fourth time is not free.
So somebody told me that they said they've been to the ER so many times, or the urgent care so many times, they really felt like they should have like some sort of VIP parking space, right, or like frequent flyer miles or something like that. And she said, I think you guys should qualify for that as well. But we are hoping that this is the end, like the portal is closing. The interesting thing is that I think we hit our deductible, our insurance plan. We have great insurance, which is a huge blessing, but we always have high deductible and then 100% coverage after we hit the deductible. And I think we probably hit our deductible the first week of January. So now we're like, who needs any sort of specialty appointment? Who needs any sort of anything? Like, this is your year to go get. I just made an appointment with the dermatologist. I'm like, do you take our insurance? Okay, absolutely. I am coming in. So this is going to be the year, like get it all done, because we've already hit our deductible. But we just want to share this because I've kind of shared bits and pieces online in different spaces, but I want to have a space to just really recount so that we remember some of this is for us, but also just to share. I think, you know, the two takeaways for me, there are a lot of, but the two main ones for me are, you know, listen to the still small promptings of the Holy Spirit. Like, God has given you a gut for a reason. Like, and it, as a mom or as a wife or as a friend, whatever, like when you have that gut feeling, like something's not right, go with your gut.
Right.
And don't, I really honestly struggled with, like, I wanted to convince myself, they said she was going to be sick, really, really sick for 3 to 5 days. I'm probably being crazy here, but I'm so glad. So thankful that I didn't try to talk myself out of that, and just was like, you know what? I don't care if they think we're crazy. We need to have another medical professional have eyes on her. And I'm so grateful we took her in when we did.
Well, and I would say as a husband, it's taken 22 years because we just celebrated our 22nd wedding anniversary to realize that sixth sense is there for a reason. And I need to trust that sixth sense means something. So,
well, and I mean, I came downstairs to you immediately and I was like, you got to take her in. Mm-hmm. And I was so grateful that you were just like, okay, like we're doing it. And I think the second big takeaway for me is just the gift of people loving us so well. And that reminder, it means so much for someone to send a text. I mean, there were so many people who brought us food, dropped off gift baskets for her, people, her community who came to the hospital. Like, I kept being like, please tell them you are still contagious. Everybody needs to wear a mask. Everybody needs to keep their distance. And they are coming at their own risk. And they still, like, they showed up. And it was such a gift to her. Gratefully, no one got sick. But just people who loved us so well and cared for us so well. And it was just an inspiration to me to think of, how can I be that to others? And, you know, even if it feels awkward, like, just send that text, just check in on the person. You know, if you can bring them dinner or send them a Starbucks gift card, or, you know, just say, can I run an errand for you? What do you need at the hospital? I'm going to go by Target and pick it up for you. You're just offering in very tangible, practical ways to help people. It means so much. And maybe you're not in a position to do that, and you can just pray. Like, people who sent me voice memos of just praying, people who said, please do not respond, but I just want you to know, like, I just prayed this for you. It just, we felt so carried. And I felt like I was telling one of my friends, I did not have the capacity to really pray much. Like, my heart was so just focused on, I feel like it was just a thing like, is she okay? Is she okay? Is she okay? And taking care of her, like, there was so much that we were just focused on taking care of her and making sure she was okay. And other people, I felt like, held up my arms and were the prayer warriors for me to carry me through and to allow me to be able to sleep. And, you know, like, I just felt so carried. And so we're just so grateful to every one of you who reached out and who prayed and who cared. We feel so humbled by it and so grateful. And we hope that the lessons that we have learned from this will allow us to be able to be more compassionate and caring for others in the future. So much more we could say, but this has already gone on much longer than I was expecting. what are we even at, Jesse?
51 minutes.
No way. I said, we're gonna wrap this up in 25, 27 minutes.
You said no longer than 25 to 27 minutes.
Well, you know what? We have not done a podcast for 3 weeks, and I guess we mixed
two into one.
We're making up for it, but we're excited to get back to our regular podcasting cadence starting this week. We have some amazing interviews that we've already done, amazing interviews to come, and a lot more that we want to share with you this year. I think in 2 weeks, we're going to be talking about what we've learned in 22 years of marriage and 20 years of parenting. So stay tuned for that. And next week, we have a podcast interview with Karen Eamon, and it is going to be fantastic to help you to start your year well. Before we close, one last thing that I want to mention. In the midst of all of this, we had a really exciting product and project that we launched. Didn't launch it how I envisioned, but we got it out there, and we will continue to do some of the things that I had envisioned as the year rolls on. But we launched a product called the 1 Hour Budget. And it is a step-by-step guide to help you to set up a budget, be more intentional with your finances, and to have more breathing room and freedom in your life. It's all in 60 minutes. And that's really my heart, was to make budgeting simplified. And so if I can follow a budget, someone who hates spreadsheets, who will not create a spreadsheet, you can too. And Jesse and I have followed a budget for 22 years, and we kind of just share what we've learned through those 22 years in this very simplified 1 hour budget step-by-step guide. There are some really cool freebies that you get when you purchase, things to help you save more money, make more money, some really great practical ideas. And also, I did a deep dive into all of the top budgeting apps and softwares out there and give you the pros and cons of each. So we will put the link in the show notes to the 1 hour budget. It is $25, but because you are a podcast listener, if you use the coupon code MONEY, that's going to knock the price down to just $19, and you'll get the 3 bonuses as well. So it's a very great deal, and our heart with it is just to help you to be able to get your finances in order so that you can have more freedom, have more breathing room, and also be able to save aggressively and give generously. We also, if you are like, I'm not sure if I'm ready for that, we have a free budget worksheet that walks you through creating a budget for each month. And we'll put the link to that in the show notes as well. So if you want to just start there and you're like, I don't know if I need a course, I don't know if I need a step-by-step guide, but I would love to have a budgeting worksheet that is completely free. So those resources are there for you. We'll probably be talking about them more in the future, but I just wanted to let you know because we're very excited that that launched. Okay, the longest podcast we've ever done. When I said it was going to be on the short side, I had a lot of words. Thanks for bearing with us if you made it to this point. I hope you have a great week. As always, we love hearing from you. We love your feedback. Send emails to crystal@moneysavingmom.com, and we will see you next time.
Thank you for joining us today. For more great resources, please visit crystalpayne.com.